I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel live broadcast and subsequent podcast. Today I am delighted to be talking to an amazing lady who I consider a real hero of the outdoor world. So today we're not talking records and running really, really fast or really, really far. We are talking about something way more important, something that is truly heroic, selfless and charitable. So here we have single mum Fran Pearson. She's set up a not-for-profit organisation called Kit Squad, where she connects donated second-hand outdoor kit from people like me and you with families and individuals on low incomes so that they can enjoy the outdoors too. So welcome, Fran, and how are you doing today?
Thank you. Do you know, I'm really well. I've come into work today and I'm really grateful that the unit that I work out of is actually really cool. So so my dogs are with me, so if somebody turns up they may well bark, so you might hear them barking if somebody turns up, but the good thing is they're actually a lot better here than they are at home.
We've got a bit of a September heat wave at the moment, haven't we? It's really, really funny.
But it's nice and cool here, so I'm quite pleased to be here and not at home because my house is quite stuffy.
Yes So you're in the storage unit for Kit Squad then. That's a new development, isn't it? Because Kit Squad's such an amazing idea, and I think it's the only one of its kind in the UK, is that right?
Yes, it is. So we're the only nationwide scheme that does this. There may be smaller regional local ones, some that I'm not aware of, may well be out there, but we're the only nationwide scheme that offers this support to people who are living in poverty. And we recently sent some gear over to Northern Ireland, so we can now say with confidence that we cover the whole of the UK.
Brilliant.
So we've supported people in all four of the home nations. So we're nationwide. We're based in Shropshire, but we're nationwide.
Fantastic. And what gave you the idea to start Kit Squad?
Well, to know, this question gets asked a lot, and I can pinpoint the exact moment when it started. So just a little bit of background on me. I had to give up work 8 years ago to become a full-time carer for a family member. It wasn't, didn't feature on my life plan at all, but life gets in the way of plans, and it certainly did for me. So I went from somebody who's a single mum working as a professional with a full-time salary, to somebody who was completely reliant on benefits, two small children, and we ended up living in social housing. It just was so far removed from what my life was and where I envisioned my life being. And my go-to place, really, for my own sanity was to get out into the Shropshire Hills, put the boots on, dogs on the lead, off we go. And literally, looking back, I genuinely think that probably saved my life. In terms of my physical and mental well-being. And, you know, it's well documented, getting out into green spaces, the benefits on physical and mental health can be extremely positive. And it wasn't my case. So as a family, we used to do this kind of, or we still do, we get out there, we wild camp, wild swim, and we hike. So when my son brought home a kit list from Cubs for a cub camp and a hike, it didn't really matter because even though we're low income, because we did it as a family, we had the gear anyway. But literally, I just thought, what do families do if they can't afford the gear and they don't have access to it? And I can pinpoint that was the exact moment that I thought maybe we could do something to help them out. And so from there, I set a task for me and the kids to actually go through our own gear to see sort of what kind of surplus gear people might have. And I'll give you an example. So we bivvy probably 2 to 3 times a year, just the three of us. We had 5 bivvy bags.
Yeah.
Why have we got 5?
Yeah.
For the rate we use them, we're never going to wear them out. And I just came to the conclusion that every house must have a cupboard or a room with this excess stock in. So, that's where it stemmed from. Literally, it was the moment Dominic, my son, handed me that kit list and I looked at it, the penny dropped. And when I looked into it, I was astounded, and I still am, that there was nothing out there like what we do. There was just nothing available.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, like DfE or something, there'd be a centralised like DfE, like Duke of Edinburgh's award sort of kit storage, because my school did DfE. I was really lucky that we had a shed thing where they had like 5 backpacks and sleeping mats and sleeping bags and things to give to the kids that didn't actually have them. And my school wasn't a disadvantaged school, and they did that. Teachers just did that. And I just remember thinking, who doesn't have a backpack? Because obviously my family is an outdoory family. What do you do if you don't? Because they're really expensive, all these items, aren't they, especially if you're going to buy them new and then never use them again. This is a fantastic idea. So how does it all work? Like, how did you start working it? How did you even tell people what you were doing? Or did you just start with those couple of bivvy bags from your own house?
Literally just started with just the extra bit of kit that we've got. And so my in hindsight, when I put the word out there first, it was February 2020, which in all fairness, in hindsight, wasn't a good time to start.
just before COVID lockdown.
The world closed down.
In your back garden, bivvy out there.
Well, to be honest, for the first 3 years, I operated really purely on word of mouth. It was just ticking over. We started it February 2020, and consistently month on month we have continued to grow in terms of gear coming in and gear going out. Brilliant. As well.
And you don't want it to start too fast, do you? Because if you're just you want kind of a slow growth model, don't you? Because otherwise you'll just be swamped.
Yes. And this is actually something. So we officially launched in January of this year. So for the first 3 years, it was just done out of my house on word of mouth, really. And then we officially launched with the website in February this year. We moved into this unit in March of this year. And I've got a small team of amazing volunteers that come in and help me now. But we were just having a bit of a discussion yesterday, because there's a couple of areas that we're looking to expand into, one
Fantastic.
Of which we're talking about today. And I'm always saying to them, one of the things we need to do is we need to manage that expansion, because you run the risk of becoming too busy, too good, too needed, and then you just become a victim of your own success, because it becomes at a point where too many people are asking for help, too many gears being donated, and you just can't manage it. So we have got areas that we want to move into, but it's managed progression, and it has to be, because otherwise it's going to fail.
Yeah, so just slowly. Yeah. And so eventually you're going to want a bit of running stuff and ultra running stuff sent in. But at the moment, what are the types of things that you generally get sent in?
Right, well, the probably our biggest beneficiary group, which you've already touched on, at really Duke of Edinburgh. You think about what somebody might need for Duke of Edinburgh expedition.
Big backpack springs to mind.
Sleeping bag. Usually the tents are supplied, we do get a lot of people ask for wild camping gear, so 1 or 2 person tents, and then hiking boots, waterproofs is another thing that we're asked a lot for. So the two main areas really currently that we get asked gear for are sort of the wild camping stroke expedition gear and hiking gear. And that has been the biggest areas really in the whole time we've been running for just over 3.5 years. And now we're at a position where we're looking to expand out. So the areas that we're really wanting to promote, and we're deciding now is about a good time to do it, because the requests this time of year tend to slow down a little bit as we're coming out of the summer into the autumn or winter months. So if we're going to sort of do any sort of business modelling and promotion, now's a good time to do it. We've got the time to divert our resources onto something else. So the areas that we're looking to expand into are trail running or foul running, wild swimming, so sort of especially winter wild swimming with the use of wetsuits. We've got quite a few wetsuits donated in, and also bike packing and cycling. Again, it's just to get people outdoors, physical exercise, and getting them into our green spaces, because research does suggest that people who are living below the poverty line are massively underrepresented in our green spaces. And one of the reasons for that is lack of access to affordable gear. So that's the kind of area that we're challenging, the barrier that we're going to smash.
Yeah, because it's like people are like, oh, there, the outdoors is free. But it actually is far from free. Like, you've got to pay to get there in the first place. You live in the inner city. And then you've got to have some good stuff. Otherwise, you're not going to get very far. So things like...
I think the great example for that is, and it's one that I often allude to, though I have to be really clear that a lot of our beneficiaries, they may ask for waterproofs and hiking boots to take the dog for a walk from their front door.
Yeah.
So, you know, an expedition can be a multi-day hike.
Yeah.
Or it can literally be walking around the playing fields from your front door.
Yeah.
And we support and champion and promote all levels of expeditions.
Yeah.
But if the example that I often talk about is Snowdon. You look at Snowdon.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic mountain to climb, and also I think a first mountain, it's really great as well, because there's paths there that have a lot of people that will support you, and there's a lot of information around the weather and things like that on Snowdon. But you can't do it in trainers. If you can't afford a decent pair of hiking boots, though we do know people do it in trainers, but the reality is you really couldn't. You should have a decent pair of foot.
You can't do it in like fashion trainers like flip flops.
So the idea being is that if you can't afford to get yourself a decent footwear, Snowdon becomes unobtainable for you. So it's about bridging that gap, really.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's really fantastic. So that's what you need more of. And Severine is watching live, and she says she has a bunch of technical tops. Most of them are branded. She doesn't need all of them, and she just wondered if you can use any. Is a t-shirt any good?
We'll take technical tops, because what we will be doing when we send out the ultra gear, you're going to be sending out some t-shirts, and just for them to use as training t-shirts. But also just so our initial our primary objective for Kit Squad is to get people who are low income outdoors. Our secondary objective is to promote recycling, reusing and renewing kits. And one of the things that I think a lot of these companies, especially ones who hold specific events, they can do quite simply is when they have the technical t-shirts that you get from running and participating in an event, they take the date off that they can use it the next year. Because we are finding in the trade that there's companies contact me, they've got like 2,000 t-shirts that they couldn't shift at the event that they can't use next year because they've put the date on them. It's have a word. Just say, look, do you realize if you hadn't put the dates on these, you could actually just use them for next year's event as well?
Saves them money and saves the environment. It's a win-win. Just got a t-shirt from Lakeland 50, and I didn't have an option to say I don't want a t-shirt, because I didn't want a t-shirt, and I don't know what to do with it. I've just put it into charity, which is rubbish, really. I didn't want one, but there was no option to sort of say no, and at the end they're just like, here's a t-shirt, and I was filming it, so I couldn't really say, no, I don't want a t-shirt. But maybe I should have. Maybe I should have said, no, I don't want it. But then they just have an extra t-shirt spare.
So it's about sort of engaging the brands, some of the brands and some of the organisations who run these events to actually think about what they can do to be more sustainable in running their operations. But we will take technical teas. Over the winter, I'm going to be running a campaign about what you can do to recycle things. And one of the things I am considering, which I know another organisation called Prelove, which also do running gear, they've taken the technical tees and turned them into a quilt.
They turn them into a what, sorry?
A quilt.
Oh, a quilt, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. I've got a bean bag. My mum made me a bean bag cover for all my technical t-shirts. I think it's in Finley's room. But yeah, you can make a lovely quilt out of all your old technical t-shirts. It's a really nice project to do over the winter.
Yeah, and it's a nice reminder of all the achievements that you've done in running these events.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah. Oh, I should have kept my Lakeland 50 one. I actually bought myself a Lakeland 50 t-shirt, a blue one that I really like, and I do wear that one. It's a cotton one, the technical ones. I never really wear because it has a big plastic logo on the front, so it's not very compatible with running. So I would just never wear it. It's dark green. I don't really wear dark green, so I bought myself a different one.
Feed that back to them as well.
Yeah, because, I should write Mark an email.
Yeah, and then if there's a smaller logo they can do, they might encourage people to reuse it. It's all feedback, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's sharing everything as well. Severine said what a great initiative. She's going to share the web page to her running club and her local community as well, so that more people find out about it over the winter. Is there anything that you can't take in? Is there anything that you just think, or maybe not those? Let's not do those ones.
There's one sort of set of things that we won't take in, and that's just what we kind of would class as safety gear. So helmets, harnesses, for example, climbing ropes, life jackets, the kind of safety gear that we can't work out the integrity of, you know. A helmet, even brand new with tags, I don't know if it's been dropped. You know, so we just don't take it in. Well, I've got a couple of helmets here that have snuck in, which we won't pass on, which I'm going to turn into hanging baskets.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to recycle them. We'll reuse them, we won't bin them. So it's the kind of the safety gear, the safety technical gear we don't accept.
And ropes and things like that, and harnesses and climbing stuff.
Yeah, we can't guarantee the integrity of it, so we just choose not to. My insurance company is quite happy with that decision. So that's what we won't accept. So was there another part to that question?
No, I suppose just like, do you take, you'd rather have like the gear side of things, like the kind of equipment side of things, rather than the clothing side of things, is like backpacks. Like you're more interested in like backpacks, hiking poles, sleeping bags,
I've got a couple of examples here. So there was another part to that question. I know what it was. Is there anything that you won't accept? There was another part to my answer. Sorry, not your question.
Yeah.
So basically, if you've got stuff that you would continue to wear, but you're choosing to donate it, maybe because it's surplus stock, or you've outgrown it, or it's too big for you now, or whatever. But that's the kind of thing. When I get stuff in, I always look at it and think, would I use it? And if the answer is yes, it's good enough for us, and it will go out on the shelves. We, in terms of equipment, we probably get asked more for equipment than we do for clothing. If I'm honest,
expensive thing, isn't it? Because you can go to Decathlon and get some quite cheap kind of outfit and backpacks and things.
But I do wonder as well that one of the other things we're going to do is actually promote what we do have in stock, because I do wonder if part of the reason for that is people not actually thinking that they can ask for it because they don't realize they've got it in stock. But that's another project for
another extra thing to do.
So I've just got a pair of shoes off the shelves, and they're Innovate, so they're really nice shoes, and the sole is, there's plenty of life left in those.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And I've actually got a pair of Innovate shoes myself, and I really like them. I find them very comfortable. And generally, they're a really good brand, and they're very well made. I like them. I rave about them. So those kind of things.
Yeah.
Because I do know, well, I have heard this, and I don't know, maybe you can tell me, being an ultra runner yourself, that when you're training, you should train in the kit that you're going to race in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it needs to be decent kit that's going to see you through, and then you know you can get a feel for it as you're training, and if it's not suitable, and you know, you've got time to adjust that and come back to us and say that's not right.
Yeah.
So another thing that we get asked for a lot are these, I think you call them running vests.
Yeah, pack, running vest, or a race vest.
Yeah. So we get asked a lot for these.
Yeah.
And these are always really useful. This is a Solomon one, so it's got, you know, with, as you know, the room for your bladder at the back. So we have got quite a few bladders here. I'm still yet to really figure out whether or not, I mean, maybe you would know about sort of handing out a second-hand bladder.
Yeah.
Whether you can, I'm not sure whether how clean it will be. I'm never really entirely sure how to clean them. I have a bladder which I use for myself when I go out hiking, which lives in my freezer at home. We haven't really figured that bit out yet.
Yeah, I just usually clean it in Milton, you know, that baby.
Oh, yeah, I also said that
baby
well.
Stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've got a lot of runners use soft bottles as well, you know, like in the front two pockets, like that. So there might be a few of these kind of coming your way after this chat.
Yeah.
I would just put Milton in them, give them a good shake, and leave them for a bit. But then these tops are a bit more difficult to do. So I'd probably maybe even pull it off.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
As much as I could, and kind of get an old toothbrush and just give it a bit of a wash, but just soaking it in Milton should do the trick, really. I mean,
yeah.
I think that should be all right.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we got quite a few of those bottles in as well then.
Yeah. Oh, and Severine says you can get into some new nozzles as well for bladders. So you can get a new one. If it's all furred up and disgusting, then new ones can be bought.
I might figure out what companies do those and ask them if they'd like to donate them.
Ask them for a donation. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Great idea. So they're quite easy to care for, these. Yeah, just stick them in the freezer, or I just leave them like that, so that, just on a windowsill or something, so that all the water sort of evaporates out of them. And I don't use anything but water in them, which helps as well. So if you start using like squash and all sorts of energy drinks and powders and stuff, that can make them go really gooey and disgusting. But if you're just using water, then it's easier to clean them. I'm just lazy, so I just use water.
Yeah, oh, well, water's good.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So now we know what kind of stuff you're after, and what kind of stuff we can potentially send you once we've had a bit of a rifle for our kit drawers. How do the low-income people find out about you, and how do they apply? Like, if anybody's listening who thinks, oh, actually, that's me, actually, in this current situation with the, you know, the cost of living crisis going on at the moment, how do they find out about you?
So it's, we haven't really promoted ourselves. It's all done through word of mouth, and things like what we're doing today would spread the word a little bit further. Again, we need to keep it quite manageable. But people can apply via our website. So you're more than welcome to contact me on email or through WhatsApp, but all applications need to come through the online application form on our website. And the reason for that is because it keeps everything in a central place in terms of processing it and the admin involved. It's just easier, because one of the reasons why we brought that in is because I was getting applications on Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, email, contact form through the website, Instagram, Twitter, and I just couldn't keep on top of it. So we get a lot of sort of requests for gear through those other areas, but I always say you need to do the online form on our website. So anybody who's in receipt of means tested benefits is welcome to apply for gear. We have quite a lot of stock in, so it's very rare that we're unable to supply anything. But we don't have an infinitive amount of stock, and we don't have the capacity to get the stock in if we don't have what you're asking for. So just be mindful of that as well.
Just like ask again later, at a later date. Or do you keep them all like pinned up somewhere, like, oh, something's come in, or that's the match that for that person, or is it just like they've got to reply later?
To be honest, it's very rare that we haven't got what people want, but I just want people to be aware that, you know, so if I suddenly had in the next 2 weeks 30 requests for trail running shoes, I wouldn't be able to fulfill it. But, you know, so just kind of be mindful that we haven't always got in stock. Very bizarrely, we get asked a lot for size 9 hiking boots and shoes, and we very rarely get size 9 hiking boots and shoes.
Really? And
size 9 is
it's really
a random
size.
Number.
Yeah, it's like the most common foot size for men, isn't it? Size 9. I thought it was really common.
Yeah, do you know what though? I do generally find, and this is for any of your male followers, I got contacted yesterday by a local, it's Shropshire Supports Refugees, and we've got a really lovely big refugee community in Shropshire, and they do what they can to support them. And they rang me up yesterday, the lady who runs it, she said, look, we seem to have a bit of a problem, but a lot of the clothes that we get donated are from women.
Yeah.
And she said, look, do you have like any surplus men's gear? And I said, no, we have exactly the same problem. And I don't know, well, I've come to the possibility that it's maybe for three reasons. One, men don't think to donate it. Two, men will literally wear clothes till they fall off.
In the case of my dad, yes.
and three, or a combination of the three, so they don't think to donate it. They wear it till it falls off. They just don't have the extensive wardrobes that females do. I don't know the reason for
that. That might be the case. I mean, stereotypically, females are the ones that go out and buy things all the time. We're supposed to, aren't we?
That's our role
in society.
Yeah. if there's anybody sort of watching this who has access to male clothing that is surplus to requirements, please send it in, because it's probably 70-30% leaning towards females in terms of the donations we get in, but the requests that we get are probably 50-50. We do really seem to be very short of men's gear. Well, not short, but it's just not as accessible to us as women's gear.
I'll ask my dad via my mum, of course, and I'll have a rifle
game,
through my husband's gear.
Give his wardrobe a cleaning.
Yeah. He doesn't know what's in it. Ask my mum.
You won't miss it. There you go.
Yeah. So this is does seem like a huge undertaking. And as a single mum, how on earth do you find the time to organise all of this? Because, like, I've got one child and someone who's helping me. So how, and I don't have time to do something like this on top of my job. So how on earth do you find the time to even do this? Not to mention the mental energy. It's amazing.
Well, my kids are at an age where they're actually quite useful.
Oh,
I don't know how old your child is.
Two.
But my, oh, no, that's not
the really. Opposite of useful.
Yeah. So my kids are 15 and 16. And actually my son has been in here quite a lot with me over summer. He's quite good at doing the tents, sorting out, putting up tents, checking them. So they're quite useful. My daughter, she's 16. She's 16 in next week. She's really good at helping me on Instagram because I'm not really good on social media. So my kids are actually quite useful, and they're also an age now. When my son's at home today, that I can leave him. He can sort himself out, get himself some lunch, and so that's really useful. I think had my kids been 2 and 3. No way would have been able to give myself as much time and energy into running this that I do at the moment. So that's really helpful. People say to me, like, what are your opening hours? And to be honest, I don't really have opening hours because one of the things I learned, I had to give up work, going back to my own life story, and my boss at the time, she worked so hard to try and keep me employed for as long as possible. But in the end, I was taking so much time off that I was just using up unpaid annual leave. And then it worked out that I just couldn't sustain it. And so I'm very aware that, and I say this of all my volunteers, is that, give me as much time and energy as you can, but your lives come first. So that if something's happening in your life that you need to address, don't give it a second thought that you can't do that because you've got to be here, and that's the kind of ethos that I'm wanting to run this business doing. So my daughter has a lot of hospital appointments. She's got a cardiac appointment coming up in a couple of weeks, which will take a good part of the day, and so I just rub that day out in the diary, and that's how I manage Kit Squad. So I manage it around my life.
Yeah, as and when you can. When you can, you do.
And so when the kids go to the dad's for the weekend, I quite often be here all weekend because it's a good time for me to come in and catch up. So it just operates around my life, really. But very conscious that my life takes priority. But the two complement each other well.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And what would you say are the major challenges facing, you and Kit Squad at the moment?
To be honest, the only challenge that I have, that we have running Kit Squad, is fundraising. It's our biggest single-handed, most challenging aspect to running it, and it has been the entire time. So we have a lot of people say to us, they want to form collaborations and we'll promote you and get you lots of donations. The donations have never really been an issue for us. I've turned up this morning, there's a 22 kilo box donated left at the door. Donations are not really an issue for us. Funding it is the issue. At the moment, currently, it costs about £2,000 a month to run Kit Squad. And we are completely reliant on donations, grants, which are quite challenging, quite hard to get, especially because haven't got that charity number. Though we're applying for charity status at the moment. And we run Patreon as well. But single-handedly, and there's many months. So I'm on LinkedIn support myself. We all run this as volunteers. And probably most months I'm having to top up the bank account to see us through to the next month. Yeah,
so you're putting in a good chunk to the nearly charity.
Yeah, so we haven't had a holiday for 3 years since I've been running this.
It
doesn't matter.
Oh, you sort of need like a big what do you call them? Not entrepreneurs. They're called something beginning with P. Philanthropist. You need a philanthropist to... you could go on Dragon's Den and just say, we're not looking for any investment. We're just looking for $2,000 a month, please.
I did think about doing that, but I think... They like schemes that line their own pockets, don't they?
Yeah, which is why...
I don't think there's any money to be made in this, if I'm honest.
No,
you know?
It's a charity, isn't it? Yeah, you sort of need like a backer, like, I don't know, one of the royal family or, you know, the Duke of Edinburgh himself, whoever it is these days.
I tell you what, and I do know who it is. It's Prince Edward, and I know where he lives because I used to live down the road from him.
He's a neighbour.
Yeah, so he's down in Bagshot, sorry. And interestingly, so the Duke of Edinburgh, I've now got connections with the Duke of Edinburgh, and I have to say, they've been really engaging with me in terms of adapting their kit list.
Fantastic.
Because I didn't think their kit list was particularly lenient towards people who were low income promotes environmental factors, and so they've been working really hard with me to actually get that addressed, but it took me a long time to get them to engage with me to the point where I actually was thinking about if you don't, I'm just going to write to Prince Edward.
I think write to him. I mean, £2,000 a month is nothing for these people, is it?
No,
it's absolutely nothing. And I know what you mean. People are keen to give me, an outdoor freelance journalist, they want to give me loads of gear, they want to give me a free race pace, they don't want to pay me any actual money. And the last time I checked, I can't pay my mortgage in backpacks. I understand that challenge, definitely. I think you should write to Prince Edward. I think you should write to The One Show as well. You know, like all these like daytime telly shows, The One Show, things like that. That would be good. And then somebody out there will be like, oh, I'll give you $2,000 a month. I'm sure of
it. Well, do you know one thing I am not very good at doing is actually doing stuff like that and asking for help. So I'm not very good. People have told me that, you know, you need to stick your head on the line and say you need help.
Yeah, or maybe one of your volunteers might be better at that. Like if they've got, like, there's certain personality types, isn't there? And one of them's a campaigner personality type. And they'll be the person that they'll be like, right, you could go on the radio, go on the local radio, do this, do that, do this. So it might be from someone in your team.
Yeah. Food for thought. I might put that to them.
Somebody could be in charge of like marketing or something.
Definitely. Oh, that's a great idea.
What do you love most about Kit Squad?
What I really love is when I send the gear out and the feedback I get back, you know, that we've made a difference. I really like that. That is such a buzz, that I could do that all day and receive that kind of feedback. That's really, really nice to get.
Must be lovely know that you've helped someone that wouldn't otherwise have. Yeah, it's just so lovely, isn't it, to like pay it forward.
Yeah, and the other aspect of that, what I really love as well, is that we provide here an opportunity that's very tailor-made for this kit to come in. As opposed to it going into the generic secondhand market. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. So I met a friend for a coffee at a local small market town. And next door, I think it was, there was a charity shop. It was like the Heart Foundation or Oxfam. It was like one of these generic ones that you get a lot of times. And I walked in and they had a pair of Birkenhead hiking boots that were size 10.5.
Yeah.
And they wanted £20 for them. And I thought, well, actually, a lot of the people that we support, £20 is out of reach. It's too expensive.
Yeah.
But I thought, what are the chances of somebody coming into this really small town, needing a pair of hiking boots that are size 10 and a half?
Yeah. You need to, like, get all that kit, don't you? And just go around all the charity shops and say, like, if you get hiking stuff, send it over here.
Well, I tell you what. Duty. So I, as well as running Kit Squad, I also volunteer for two other charities. Kit Squad's got a charity. So I volunteer for the Shropshire Cycle Hub, which gets bikes donated in, and then we refurbish them, get them back out to get people out cycling. And the other one is Shropshire Cat Rescue, which is my therapy. I just go and absorb myself.
My sister does that. She volunteers in a local cat home. She loves it. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
And they've got a charity shop in our local town in Shrewsbury, and but they divert any of the outdoor kit they get. They leave it in the cupboard.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and they just say, just you have it, we won't sell it, you can take it.
That's amazing. Yeah, imagine if more shops did that, you might get the men's stuff coming through that you need.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. And so that's what I really like. It's about that, it's a very specific secondhand market that we're tapping into here. It's not being lost in the huge generic secondhand market that you see up and down the high street. So
yeah,
it's very specific. So yeah. And it keeps it within the community that it was designed to serve, really.
We've just had another live comment from Tadej. He says, does Blue Peter still exist in the UK? We could get you on Blue Peter, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could.
That's exactly the type of things that they love to do, campaigning, fundraising.
Yeah, and we get a lot, we get asked a lot for kid stuff.
Yeah.
Usually we try and encourage people to just do one application a year. If they want to reapply for something else, we will, of course, consider it. And if it's something that we have a lot of stock of, then we're happy to oblige with that. But the exception to that rule are families, and we have a lot of families come back to us and re-gift us back the kit that the kids are outgrown, and we'll supply them the next size up.
Brilliant. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. So we do support a lot of families in that way.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a loan service. Like, once you finish with it, if it's still okay, then just give it back.
Yeah. But there's no obligation to give it back. Because people say, like, when you give the stuff out, do you expect it back? Are you a lending library? And no, we're not. One of the things that we are considering doing is setting up a lending library next year. If nothing else, it will generate a bit of income for us.
Yeah.
But also people who don't want to buy the stuff but just want to do the odd weekend camping.
Yeah.
It ticks that box as well in terms of environmentally, that it's not encouraging people to go out and needlessly spend money buying this material stuff.
The lending library.
So we've got a lending library. There was a point before that.
Kids hand it back. You were talking about the kids. They have size and then they hand it back. I don't know if that was the thought train.
People say, like, you know, can people keep it? And the reality is yes. So when we supply kids with stuff, we have an expectation that they will give it back, especially if there's younger siblings. Just keep it going, gift it on, get more people outdoors.
Yeah.
But also people say, like, well, why do you not just, you know, ask for it back when they've done their walk or whatever? But my mentality is that I want you to keep using it.
Yeah.
And you're more likely to go for a hike if your hiking boots are just sat by the front door. You're more likely to put them on and go.
Yeah.
Than you would do had you ceased having access to them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the objective for, you know, when we send gear out, there is no expectation that we're going to get it back. But clearly, if you stop using it, morally, the right thing to do would be gift it back to us, and we can send it on. But when we send it, it's yours to keep.
Yes. And how does it make you feel to send out a big parcel like that to a low-income family?
Yeah, do you know, it's brilliant. And we have used charities out there ourselves for gear. Family Fund is one. And they supplied us with quite a few items over probably the last 10 years. And I know what it's like to not have the capacity to do that for your own family. And I know how grateful I've been when I've actually reached out to these charities and they've stepped up and helped me. And it's just, you're so grateful and so relieved that there's somebody out there who can support you, that I feel honoured in this situation to actually.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.